This episode of Super Pulp Science is brought to you by Dragon Nanny, the new graphic novel by Justin Curry and GMB Kamichuk and Will Little, now available at chasingartwork.com.
Attention, citizens! It's time for Super Pulp Science!
This is Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how genre gets made. My guests today are also my prisoners. My long-suffering co-host, Justin Curry, also known online and the world over as Chasing Artwork, and our producer extraordinaire, Dan Vetterbonker, who has returned from many misadventures to help us with our audio quality. Thanks for being with us today, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Happy to be here.
Oh my gosh. Justin, happy to be here. First thing I want to ask you, Justin, is how many hours did it take you to design your newest print? House full of horrors has got so many little details. It's bananas.
And I think you were around when I first started thinking about that out loud. Like, I've been planning that piece for, I want to say, over a year now. I just haven't had the wherewithal to like sit and just get to it. But I finally sat and built this. I kind of like based it like a dollhouse when you can open them up and see like a cross section of the dollhouse. So the idea is a big house cut in half, and in every single one of the rooms, I grew up watching way too many horror movies, so I wanted to fit in all the monsters from the horror movies I watched as a kid growing up and loved. So it's, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Every house has a whole bunch of Easter eggs hidden around in it, and it took a very long time, but it turned out exactly how I had pictured it in my head, which I'm really, really happy when that happens. It doesn't always happen. But when it does, it's the best feeling ever as an artist.
So this is awesome. I haven't seen the finished version. You sent us a started version of it when you'd done a few of the rooms, but you hadn't done all of them mm-hmm. yet. And then me and Gregory are just like hurling up monster ideas at you. What about this one? What about this one? And you're like, yep. And it's pretty much they're all here. Oh my God.
So the only ones I might have to go back in and put them in. The 1990s, 80s, The Blob, the newer Blob. I loved that movie. But the piece is in black and white, and The Blob is such a iconic pink color. I wasn't quite sure how to make that one work.
What I would do with The Blob is I would just have that guy's foot sticking out of the sink.
See,
and
like,
anyone who's seen The Blob will know. Mm.
I don't know if that's the most iconic kill in The Blob, though. When I think about it, I always think of the the quarterback who's like one of the first big kills where he gets like he's half dissolved and like reaching for the girl.
Isn't that like cover of the movie? That's like I believe the tape had that.
Yeah, like it's, I think so. And then the other big one was the Exorcist.
That's tricky in black and white. I was trying to think of it.
Yeah.
What was the second one?
But The Exorcist. I want like having the girl walking backwards down the stairs. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a big movie for me, but I think it's a huge movie for a lot of people. So I'd like to get it in there.
Oh yeah, I can see where you could put it.
Yeah.
I see a staircase.
Yeah, yeah. There's a great spot for it. And then the biggest comment has been nobody recognizes the host monster. Which I was a little surprised at.
Where's the host?
The host is that big monster, that big tadpole-ish thing.
That's
a Korean horror movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I've never seen The Host. So I guess that's what that's.
You know what that reveals, Justin, is that you're. Justin, it just reveals that you're so cultured.
I'm so cultured. I watch subtitled movies, thus cultured.
I've heard good things. No, I've been meaning to watch The Host. I have. But now I have a reason.
Yeah.
cool.
Yeah, and that's the director who did Parasite that won, yeah, what, Best Picture or something? Yeah.
It won everything.
Yeah, there you go. It won everything. It was a great movie.
That's why everybody kept saying Parasite was a horror movie, and I'm like, no, it's not. I don't think it is.
No, it's not.
Yeah, he done another horror movie, that's why.
No, they're confusing the host.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
So, Greg, I wanted to kind of ask you, because this is kind of, it ties into this discussion. I notice I keep getting myself into bigger and bigger projects, and less often am I doing something that I can do in a day or two. Everything I want to do takes like 3 weeks to 6 months to a year now. Have you noticed that as well? Like all your projects are growing in scope?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm able to say to myself, that'll take 6 months. And I look at my schedule and I can see the 6 months I have to do it in. So it's, you know, it's just a function of this odd COVID world that we're in, is that we have more time to plan big blocks of working time. But what I've also found is that I try to then create real specific, achievable, smaller goals within those larger projects. Like on Moon Patrol, because it's so big,
right,
I tell myself every night, I'm gonna finish one layout, one tone, or one, you know, I guess you'd call it like an inking stage, right? I'm working digitally, and not to worry beyond that. I have a tendency to, right, want to work in sprints, like to work for 5-6 hours at a time on something. And I've just been telling myself to ease down, Ripley, you've blown the transaxle, and that I should just go at a more steady pace. So yeah. But now that you have this terrible affliction, Justin, I will warn you that the big projects will linger and the small projects will keep occurring to you until your brain can't hold any more thoughts.
And then what are we talking about? Like a scanners kind of thing happening?
Say that again. Yeah.
You're gonna fill up. You're gonna keep getting ideas at the same rate that you used to. Yeah. But it's gonna take you longer and longer to finish them.
Mm. Well, that's not great.
Well, it doesn't have to be the same for him, right? Yeah. Everyone has a different process.
It sounds frustrating.
You've just been spoiled, that's all. Working as a print, working primarily as a person who has like a single story locked into a single image while you make these prints, which, I mean, the strength of your storytelling comes from this idea that you often create a conflict within your composition, right? Your big versus small tendency is inherently a storytelling device. So you're used to getting in, having the whole adventure in your head in like an evening or two, finishing it up, and then moving on.
Right.
So you'll always have prints to help you exercise that need to finish a story real quick.
I know.
I think that that'll keep you sane. But once you have two or three big projects that start to overlap, like one's not quite finished and one's in editing stage and one is halfway through, you'll slowly, slowly edge towards madness. At least that's what I found.
That's good to, something to look forward to.
I think a little creative mania is something positive to look forward to.
I missed out on a Kickstarter meeting that you had the other day. Can we talk about that on the podcast, or is that still hush hush?
I don't know. That's a good question. This is like a staff meeting moment now. I don't think it's hush hush. I think we've talked about Hannah and Haunted Helpers before, right? So if anything,
yeah,
we're like just about to launch it. Like Hannah's got, between what Hannah's already finished and the little bits of stuff that I have left to do and the stuff you've already figured out for shipping, we could basically, yeah, we could pivot into an announcement on that if you want to.
Do you feel like now that like you kind of saw behind the curtain a bit on the Nanny Kickstarter, now being like you're doing most of the content writing for Hannah's Kickstarter. How what have you learned about the process or about Kickstarter that you're excited about?
Well, one of the things that I'd say is definitely that I learned from looking at comparisons of the Dragon Nanny Kickstarter versus other books for younger readers, which Haunted Helpers definitely qualifies as, comparing and contrasting is that on Dragon Nanny, the expectation on a graphic novel of that size and scope compared to other projects of the similar size and scope is that you really explain who you are, how you're going to, why you think you can fulfill it, you know, what gives you the right to even dare ask for this much money. All those things are more upfront in a project with a scope like Dragon Nanny, whereas because of the page count and the overall cost of printing that Haunted Helpers is going to have, it's a much more casual ask, and that the book is already finished, so you can show huge amounts of it finished to the backers, and you're basically just, you know, showing them this cute, funny thing, and if they want one, they can have it by ordering it right here. You have to make the Kickstarter much shorter and more succinct and real kind of light. And my problem is that, you know, there's this old Hemingway quote, I didn't have time to write you a short letter, so I wrote you a long one. That's sort of what I'm trying to do now is I've got a long version of everything about Haunted Helpers, and I am instead trying to
four times as long as the book itself.
That's right. So I'm trying to make
it's much longer than the book itself. Yeah.
Yeah. Short, playful ask that isn't as many words as the actual book. Otherwise, it feels like too much. But also, every time I think that maybe there's something else I have to explain or show, Hannah sends like a little like thumbnail illustration or like puts stuff for the Kickstarter illustrations that basically says everything. Like you see those pictures, and if you don't want this book, you're broken inside. It's basically how I feel. Right? So it's your own fault. There's not too much to like sell. Like she's done such a great job of bringing it to life that it's either you want this the way it is, here it is, we're not hiding anything, or you don't. So it'll be more a question of like letting people know how to take a chance or why to take a chance on maybe a creator that they aren't familiar with. But then the other thing we learned from Dragon Nanny was how many people had never heard of us who backed
it. Right? Yeah, like it wasn't just targeting your existing audience and sending them to Kickstarter. You're reaching a whole new crowd. It's so nice having, like, Hannah's pretty much, the book is done, and it's so much easier going into a Kickstarter with a finished product than like something that's half cooked or you just have the basic idea for. Like it's so much work to build the Kickstarter. If you don't have the project already like half figured out, it's almost like doing more work. Like more work in the wrong, not the wrong direction, but a different direction than the project itself. Like if you're going to put in 100 hours to the, like building a Kickstarter campaign and only 30% of that is usable in the actual product or project, if you put 100 hours into the actual book itself, 80% of that is usable in the Kickstarter. Do you know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting.
Almost
I've been doing these online training courses where for like 3 nights, 2 hours a session, people will bring their manuscripts, you know, either illustrated manuscripts or novels or, you know, whatever, collections of short stories, lots of different stuff I've been doing with people, but they'll bring that to me. And the first thing I do is I have them, I won't look at the book first. So the thing that kind of surprises people at first is that they bring their project and I don't want to see it. Instead, the first sit down is I have a series of questions where I ask them some qualifying, quantifying questions about their own book. And if they can't answer those quickly and succinctly, it really tells me right away if they even know what they're making. And what you're talking about with the Kickstarter is the same thing. Because the book is finished, we already know what we made. So we're just describing it. When a book is not yet finished, you're still trying to zero in on what you really intend and what it's really going to look like and why it's going to look that way and what are those ingredients going to be. And you're making it up a little bit on the Kickstarter and you're just hoping to hit the mark. Whereas if you have the book done first, you just say, oh, well, it's this character going on this adventure for this reason to this place. Do you want that book or not?
What happens if you figure out a better direction along the way, but you've promised the Kickstarter people something different? Now, like, your half-formed promises dictate the course of the project, you know, rather than creatively you being able to experience and build it on the go.
Well, it's funny you say that. I was having a conversation with some people about a Kickstarter role-playing game that they backed, where it sounded like that's exactly what happened, that the people asked for a certain amount of money, planned a certain kind of thing, and then as they were doing the development and design, the creative team struck on what they believed was a better idea, and that's what they sent out as their fulfillment. But many
were people
of the
upset?
Many of them were upset because they said, you know, this isn't what I paid for. And they said, well, this was a work in progress. We told you that. And so it creates this conflict of expectation versus reward. And I mean, disappointment is the gap between expectation and reality, right? So if you said to me, back my kaiju versus robots book on Kickstarter, and when it finally showed up, you're like, you know what? It turned out I didn't really like robots. I made it Smurfs.
I'm in.
Right? Yeah, Dan is in. But you would feel a little bit baited and switched, right, along the way. Yes. So I think it ties into that. So what's interesting for both you and I, you just did storyboards on this project and someone else did the main illustration. Hannah came in and brought it to life. I wrote a funny rhyming couplets that we then Hannah brought to life. And so the real backbone of the project is that Hannah Tickle built this whole book around our idea, and we guided it and we shaped it a little bit. You know, in film, we'd be like the producers, really. But she was the director of this little adventure. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually way easier for me to write copy by simply writing what it is instead of what I intended it to be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like in college, they always wanted you to come up with a rationale of your process, write out exactly how this creative process is going to go. And if you tried to do that first, it was always a nightmare. And so you very quickly learn, you do that as the very, very last thing, is your write-up on how you planned it, right? You just do the project and then you rationale the process.
That's why it's called rationale.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you're always lying. You're like, this was the plan I had at the beginning. No, you just do what you were going to do.
Exactly.
Well, I thought you were going to make me feel bad because I do an assignment with the graphic design students. It's a mock job interview. And that's one of the questions I asked them to tell me their creative process behind this piece. And they do a good job. You know, they do a good job of telling me what it was, but it is because they've already completed it.
Yeah,
now, exactly. If you really want to put them on the spot, Dan, you ask them to tell you the process of you give them a mock assignment and then ask them what their process is.
The process is. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I can't pretend that I know enough about design to give them any such assignment. So.
Yeah, but what you'll be testing them on is how they panic, which is of value, right? Yeah.
They're always panicking.
My father always told this story about doing job interviews that he always had ask for the final question. And he would say, take something out of your purse or wallet and tell me about it. And people would just, he said, just sweat bullets, just panic. And he knew right then that those people maybe aren't prepared for anything, which is what he needed in those jobs, right? Whereas someone who takes out their wallet, looks inside and says, okay, here's a picture of me fishing, or here's a expired coupon, or here's, you know, they're able to talk about what they have at hand, which is in the jobs that he was interviewing for, an essential skill to be handed something, assess it, and then discuss about it. And so he thought the fairest way to ask that was to simply ask, what's in your own pockets is Bilbo Baggins.
Right. I might have to use that, actually. That's a good one. I might, if any students are listening to this episode, they might get a preview of an upcoming question. That's a good one.
Right. I think the modern version would be like, pull something out of your camera roll and tell me about it.
Yeah,
something work appropriate.
Yeah.
Doctor, come in here quickly.
I'm with a patient.
There's a man dying in here. Hurry.
Excuse me a moment.
So Kickstarter wise, we're feeling pretty good. I think we're going to officially announce that project real soon.
Like, I'd love to, because I did a horror house themed piece and we're releasing like a scary kids book.
Horror.
I can't see it working horror. In my mind, but
yes, you gotta use that second horror. Syllable. Horror. The second R is important there.
The horror? Yeah. A horror house.
There you go.
Oh my goodness.
I'd love to find a way to like make those both work together, but I don't know if they will.
I think they work.
They're synonymous. Yeah. Anyone who watches horror movies that also has kids doesn't mind a book with little monsters in it. That's for sure. We'll be butting up against people who think that a vampire, ghost, a skeleton, and a mer creature only belong at Halloween, but we think they're year-round creatures. Right. So, what you gonna do? What are you going to do? I have been undergoing a secret project, which I couldn't really discuss until the ink was dry on the contract. So I have been, I created, I guess the best way to put it is like this. I'm going to tell a story that leads to how I got this new job, which is my kids left their school at the beginning of pandemic, actually a little before the lockdown happened, and they've been learning from home this whole time. Talking to the parents of my kids' friends at that school, we have recently learned, and I'll leave the name of the division and school out of it for the sake of the poor principal and division heads, but they're on to their seventh classroom teacher since the beginning of the school year. Burnout is through the roof, stress through the roof. They can't keep teachers who are good at teaching don't believe that this qualifies as teaching. And many of them, you know, either leaving the profession or going on stress leave, or, you know, it's just it's a real mess. And for those of you who this is your first episode, I spent 10 years as a classroom teacher. So those are my people that I would see and hear their suffering. And so I reached out to my old school principal, or the school I taught at, the high school I taught at, and I said, you know, how are things going? And is there some way I could help? And to her credit, she said, yes, here's the person you should talk to. And the principal of that new remote teaching school in this division, they've organized all their teachers who are teaching remotely as their own school. You know, it's not a real brick and mortar school. It's just everyone's under one principal and everyone works together on the same job, right? And so you can get some real team building in that way, which I thought was already ahead of the curve compared to the division my kids were in. And I said, you know, how can I help? And there was this long sigh. And throughout that sigh, there was this ping, 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 ping of all the emails coming into that principal's inbox, like 5 or 10 in a space of one sigh as he collected himself. And then he said, you know, Gregory, how can you help? And I pitched an idea, which was to create interesting, classroom story related materials, pictures, prompts, adventures, characters, storytelling devices. This thing that when I was a teacher, I used called the classroom story, which I co-developed with another teacher called Brent Schmidt. We use this to great effect many times as a way of getting kids who are not interested in the regular school interested in producing critical thinking material. So I said, what if I made a bunch of this crazy stuff that's just interesting to kids, and then we figure out how best to assess them after? Let's get them interested first, assess them later. And so for the next 7 weeks, I'm basically producing interesting story prompts, character illustrations, all the kind of stuff that we brainstorm at the beginning of our storytelling process, Justin, just making endless amounts of that stuff, the kind of ingredients that you would build a story out of, so that it can be given to kids and say, here's a character, here's a place, here's a situation, here's a thing they're after. What is the story we can build out of this thing? To give kids agency in their own development. And I didn't say this in the meeting, but it's basically for the next 7 weeks, I'm building materials as if I'm a DM for like 150 kids. And I just have to make encounters for them. Hmm. And it's pretty, it's a dream come true job in many respects. Aside from the staff meetings, which I now have to attend. I haven't had to attend a staff meeting.
Oh, man.
In like 5 years. So that part is the hardest part, because I always want to flip the table and say, no, 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 let's put kids ahead of everything else. But an organization has to run, of course. And so there's a lot of administrivia that must be attended to.
Well, that sounds awesome.
Justin disappeared.
Oh, okay. I'll have to keep an eye out for him. That sounds awesome. And I can tell you, my experiences are very mixed when it comes to the remote learning aspect. Of course, my kids were all kind of thrust into it in March when everything kind of went down. This holiday break, my son, who's in grade 9, was off for 2 weeks. They kept him home for 2 weeks. And they were supposed to be continuing the key had been going to school, and they were supposed to be continuing it online. And I don't think they really knew what they were doing in that respect for the online learning. So I can understand the frustration of the teachers who are having to do that. For sure, it's tough. It's tough out there. So good job.
Well, you know, and related to that, nobody knows what they're doing, because no one's ever done this before.
Yeah, exactly.
We have never had to do this before. So this expectation that teachers should have it all figured out is unrealistic.
No.
And that admin should have it all figured out, unrealistic. Right? But you look to teachers as leaders in those situations, and it's been really hard for a lot of them to get it right. And what all the teachers in this remote learning space in this division have in common is they chose it. And so they're willing to be there. They're interested to do it that way. They want to try some new things.
That's a great idea.
And,
I really like
they
that.
They have some resources.
I like the idea of kind of putting all those resources in one space, like virtual space, I guess, because it's all kind of organized. And it's like more like
virtual school, right?
Oh, my thing's messing up here. So that sounds awesome. I'd love to go to virtual school. Actually, I teach virtual school. What am I talking about?
Well, we'll see how well it works. That's the whole other thing, right? Is it's a bit of an experiment. And
yeah,
I used to do it often and have a great time doing it in a regular classroom environment. Switching it to an online space is a little bit of a different challenge. And this is what I said to them. I said, you know, I could come and take over a classroom for you, do it half time. You know, because I'd be interested. I don't mind when there is no plan. I can make up a plan, no problem. But I think what would be better is if I could make supports that I could give to teachers. And then if that teacher needs a break, needs to tap out, like I need 2 days, Mr. C, to just observe the kids doing something else, I can come in, run that story session for them, engage with those kids in a new way, and let that teacher observe those students in another environment instead of constantly having to be the content creator.
It's like Greg's a virtual field trip. He comes in and takes the kids away for a day or two and then drops them back off.
Yeah, except they don't get to go anywhere. They're stuck with me.
We better go now.
But it's been this interesting correlation between the script writing gig that I have. I'm in a like script development stream. So I'm writing drafts of a horror movie, but there are other creative voices involved there too. So they have a say, and then it changes what you're planning. The role-playing game design stuff that I've been doing for the last couple of years, the story breaking that we do regularly, Justin, in our studio, and then the design and illustration elements, all those things kind of feeding into this, what I hope will be like a big exhaustive menu of just interesting stuff that a teacher who's a little overwhelmed can say, okay, fine, I'm tagging you in. Come in and do something weird. That's, even if all you are to them is the Mr. Dress-Up episode of the day, then at least there'll be a piece of engagement that gives them the ability to, you know, tackle the many of the have-tos that go along with being a regular classroom teacher. So not the job I thought I'd be doing in 2021. But an interesting thing that just sort of occurred.
What did was it Frank Sinatra that sang "That's Life"? That's life. We can't afford the rights to that song.
Yeah, careful, careful. No. We're gonna get us into some real trouble. So that's something that I do just every morning now. So for a couple hours every morning, I'm producing that material specifically for the classrooms. And then I found it to be a real great warm up to the other stuff that I have to do that are the creative projects. Because, you know, Justin, we've talked about this many times. When you're busy on a big project, you have a million ideas for other things. And now I write those down. And
exactly.
I just give them to kids to play with. Make a story out of this. And here's an illustration.
And you'll own everything they come up with, right?
And no, well, I will not. They'll own everything they come up with.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But ideas are worthless, so it doesn't matter. It's only the people who can actually finish a book that are our direct competition. So that part's been interesting.
There was a short movie competition by Blumhouse a couple years ago where it was like, come up with like a 5-minute short horror movie. And if you win, you get to like be flown to like the studios of Blumhouse and like have a meeting with like creative directors and stuff like that, and maybe get it made into a movie. But then somebody read like the fine print, and it was something along the lines of like, anything you submit, they own. And if you win, they only have to, like, if they choose to make your thing into a movie, you're entitled up to $1 in compensation and nothing else. And then it was like depending on the studio exec's schedule, it seemed very unlikely that you'd ever actually get that meeting because so many things would have to align on their end to make it happen. So as soon as this came out, then the whole thing fell apart. But you should make them sign something similar. Yeah. If they come up with a good story, Gregory owns it, and they have to pay. You only have to pay him a dollar.
No, I think you monster. You're missing the point here. Is that we're trying to give kids agency over their own creative process, not capitalize on their creative ideas for our own benefit. I know we've been separate in the studio for a while, so like my positive influence has left your immediate area, and maybe I need to come and visit more often because you're turning into a monster in my absence.
Just wearing the business hat.
Remember when we did things?
That's all that's going on.
No, not at school. You don't wear the business hat, you monster.
That's college. That's where you put the business hat on, right?
That's right. That's where you convince young up-and-coming talent to illustrate Haunted Helpers, is people coming out of their schooling. But not at the beginning.
Right.
Because we're not the villains here. Probably.
Yet.
yet. How's the print shop going online? I know you've been doing pushing that a fair amount.
So I just got back from me and my girlfriend went on a ski trip in Manitoba. So we just went up to Assisippi for a couple days. So I just got off the road of like driving for 3.5 hours. And I really like how I did it was I scheduled everything. So the second I took off, my print shop went up. And now that I'm back, I get to take a look at everything. But it was kind of like the store was running while I was having a vacation.
That's kind of nice.
But it
That's
seems like it went very well.
Supposed to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, good for you.
Exactly. Yeah, and it was for anybody concerned. Like 10% capacity and huge hills. Like I don't think we came within 100 feet of another person. Oh, sorry, I had to switch out microphones. Am I sounding okay?
Yeah, now you are. But it kind of broke up there for a second. So can you start over with that? Not the whole thing, but what was the last thing you heard, Greg? I can't think of it.
Yeah, go back about 30 seconds.
Skiing was, it was the first day the ski hill was open and they had a lot of, just, there weren't too many people there and like wide open hills. So it felt like the safest thing to do in these scary times, like the best thing, best vacation you could have while adhering to all the safety protocols and feeling safe. So
not a bad idea. And it was not a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Not well, now everybody's going to do it, I'm sure. So we were just on top of things, but yeah. But it was, yeah, it was quite nice turning the store on and then walking away from it and coming back to finding that I had sold things. So,
you left the print.
Yeah, quite a few of the new haunted house piece as well.
Awesome.
So it went well.
Well, I want it, so I got to.
That's amazing.
I guess I have to order
it. I started filling out my Society 6 again. I hate that platform so much. Like the actual products are good when they come out, but on the interface side, like on my side, as someone who has to upload things to it.
Test that. I forgot about that.
The worst. It's the worst.
Sorry.
Much prefer the back end of Redbubble if we're just talking, like to the dear listener who's thinking about the two. The swear factor on the back end of Society 6, way higher than Redbubble, which seems a lot more intuitive. Once I switched my link to point at the Redbubble, even though I have way less content there, I got way more, it just seems more user-friendly. So like, it's a very interesting experiment. I normally we're on the road so much, I don't have time to tinker with these sorts of things. But I found that, for my own self, between the two, if you're thinking about making an online store, Redbubble lets you set the percentage that you're going to earn from each thing more easily. It lets you edit and adjust the PNGs or JPEGs way more easily. It lets you group edit whole product lines, whereas Society 6, for some reason, seems like all the wheels are falling off. And when I looked on a bunch of online forums, like some pretty big names in the Society 6 world there were all complaining that whatever's been going on for the last few months has just been getting worse. So,
Oh no.
On the product creation side. On the store side, everything seems to be running, all that stuff works. People who order things, they get it. People who want something, they get it. The print quality has not changed, but just there's something going on their IT side. So uploading stuff is just a nightmare lately. So word to the wise, a warning. Yeah. That if you're hoping for a quick turnaround on your Society 6, it isn't going to happen.
So why were you
dealing with not this? Not at the time that we recorded this.
Well, why are you on Society 6 then?
Well, I have a site already. I had a whole bunch of products on there. Because it's print on demand, and it does fulfillment and framing. And so as a way for people who have been asking me to support me from other cities where I don't have to do the fulfillment, and they're not super picky about getting a signature. Like it sounds funny, but if I ask someone, do you want a signature? You can get it at my shop here. Or do you want it framed? Here it is at Society 6. They usually take the framed option over the signature option. I try not to be too hurt by that. But the truth is, people want to hang it as soon as it arrives.
So, yeah, and they can always bring it to a show and get you to sign it.
It's been a way to manage that. That's happened. Mm-hmm. It's always weird when that happens because I recognize the print quality as being very different. I mean, to them, it doesn't matter. To me, it's a different paper stock. I know it immediately. Right, I feel the back with my thumb, and I'm like, "Wait a minute!" Right, you didn't get this. Where'd you get this? So,
come on! You can do better than that. This came up because I watched back to back. I watched yesterday. It's a new comedy about this musician is in a bike accident, and when he wakes up, he's in a world where the Beatles never existed, right? It's just a random, quirky premise, but it's a great movie. Yeah. So he wakes up, the Beatles never existed, but him as a huge Beatle fan knows all their songs. And so he basically starts playing the Beatles music and gets famous from it. But I was thinking about that and how... And like we say on the podcast often, like ideas are worthless, and it's all the other things. It's the hard work. It's the world in general. And it's all these other elements that like make something actually a success. And how, if you went back in time, like before Star Wars was a thing, and you know, all the Star Wars movies, and you tried to make that happen, it probably wouldn't work.
Pretty sure this is. Pretty sure Hurley tried to do this in Lost.
Oh, did he? Yeah,
I think so.
And nobody. Yeah,
didn't work. So sorry, I interrupted.
It's an interesting. Yeah. They do that also in Reign of Fire, the movie where dragons take over. Right, where the two characters are doing a play that they've written, and all the kids are watching it, and they're watching with rapt amazement as Darth Vader turns out to be Luke's father.
Yeah.
And they're gasping in horror and shock because the world ended, so they don't know anything about Star Wars, right? So I think it's an interesting thing, is like, would stuff hit if we didn't have that? Could you reproduce a masterpiece again? It's hard to know. Or even if it's just something popular, like the more you learn about how things worked, I wonder if you could do it again. Because when you try to imitate stuff, it often doesn't work.
I'm on the biker mice side from of Mars. No, I think it's it's winning the lottery of things. Like even if you went back in time with all the successful ideas and tried, I don't think it would work. I think it's all those other elements that that you need to make something successful. It's kind of comforting in a way too, though, isn't it? Like it's not as much the idea is important, sure, but it's all these other things that may or may not work in your favor.
Oh. Undeniably. And there are so many things that work. Like if we were talking about something that develops organically, it does what it's going to do a little at a time. But if you're talking about suddenly replicating an enormous success, it's almost impossible to do well. You know, like you can look at the Marvel, you know, let's look at the Marvel films as an example, as we look at this thought experiment. You could say that WandaVision, right, is a pretty interesting show to watch, but it stands on the back of billions of dollars of entertainment training for the audience. If WandaVision came out first, if that was our first foray into the Marvel Universe, I think that would probably have been it.
Oh, I'm sure.
That would have been a flop, yeah.
Yeah, it's all about timing is everything. That's part of the reason why Iron Man worked so well. It was the perfect time for that film.
How close was that film to not happening, right? There was so many things going against that film. Like, nobody wanted to give that movie a chance.
Well, right. And the actor was, you know, we all love him now, but he was a non-starter in Hollywood at that time, you know. Hard to get a job as a former drug addict, alcoholic, set-destroying madman. But Favreau saw beyond all that and put together a really great thing.
Actually, what you've hit upon here, Greg, is the... We've actually seen this. We've seen false starts in Marvel before, right? We've seen, like, cheesy 70s Spider-Man and then the Japanese Spider-Man show and the Captain America and all these kind of really kind of low budget and not very good things. And so those didn't work. So those are, like, all these kind of false starts. Now Iron Man was the right time for it to happen.
But I think without that terrible rubber ears Captain America, without Dolph Lundgren Punisher, right? Without those things trying and revealing that there was an audience, just not the audience they thought.
Right.
Right. We're standing on all those, like, those flops actually were the bricks that we're now standing on, right?
Yeah. And some of them were actually quite successful, like the Incredible Hulk's TV series was a hit. That was a big hit, right? So Marvel was, you know, they had still been doing it back then. I don't know why I'm on this kick for old TV shows. I've been watching Quantum Leap.
Oh, yeah. Ooh,
Quantum Leap.
That's a great show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Quantum Leap should have had a missed opportunity to have a crossover with the Scott Bakula Star Wars or Star Trek, pardon me.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that would have been a great episode. I mean, they did, you know, when, oh, okay, whatever. We'll get on a Star Trek tangent later.
They do all the time travel stuff anyway.
Well, they do. Like, I think about that Deep Space Nine episode where they did the trouble with Tribbles and they went back in time to the Tribbles. Like, done that kind of stuff
right.
With Star Trek, right? So they could totally do something like that.
Oh, I wanted to bring up, I watched all of Lower Decks, that new animated Star Trek.
Yeah.
Started like a little lukewarm, but God, did I love it by the end.
It's very funny. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I like it.
Mm-hmm. I have not seen it, but it is definitely on my list. There's so much Star Trek now, it's actually a little bit infuriating. I love it so much, and I want
to. I have a hard time. I can't get through season 2 of Discovery for some reason. I keep trying to restart and rewatch it, and I just keep losing interest. And I think it gets better.
That's not a good sign.
I just can't.
You know what? I feel that way about it too. If we're going to just turn our podcast into a review of popular Star Trek, the last few minutes.
Give the people what they want.
My feeling is that Star Trek Discovery, my hot take is that Star Trek Discovery is an incredible science fiction show. Incredible science fiction show. Really well written, really well produced, really well directed. It doesn't feel at all like a Star Trek show.
No, you're right.
And that's probably, for many viewers, a good thing. And that has helped their ratings immensely. But to misquote William Gibson, I have found myself mistrusting that particular flavor.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, this has been Super Pulp Science, where we have talked all about how genre gets made, how you combine what's working with what doesn't, word, pictures, and stories, and you try to turn a classroom into a IP development firm for chasing artwork. We've talked about all these things today, and I've greatly appreciated your time. But this is Gregory Kamichak reminding you that you should join the fight and make comics.